Welcome to SVU Pod, Especially Heinous. I'm Gabe.
I'm Tasha.
We are on season 6, episode 20, Night. There better be a part 2 to this because I don't believe any of this shit.
Mm-mm.
I don't believe any of it.
No. It's ridiculous, though. It's a ridiculous...
Like, he got framed.
Oh.
Absolutely, right?
I mean, either that or they played this character so weird. I just kept waiting for them to drop the...
The lawyer is just doing... Yeah.
I know it didn't happen when I was watching it. I'm like, I know this isn't the story, but it feels like this is where the story is supposed to go, that it was supposed to be Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
Or at least the mom and Bradley Cooper in cahoots together.
Yeah, like, something.
All right, let's get started.
All right. Opening scene. So it's at night. Some kids are absolutely shredding on their boards to some killer speed metal.
Yes.
Like really early aughts are ripping it up. Some dude totally fucking racks himself and beefs it on the quad or whatever.
You couldn't see, but off camera, junior high Gabe and junior high Tasha were sitting there watching our boyfriend.
Just creaming our jeans. We're like, hey, he's gonna do a kickflip.
Just creaming our Jenkos watching these guys fucking rip it up.
His homies are like, dude, get up. Get back to shredding. He starts to get up, but finds a $100 bill on the ground. Dude, let's go buy some beers, yells the white guy with dreads.
Oh, my God. 2005 Tasha's like, oh, my God, do you know how much cocaine we can get with $100?
2005 Gabe says, fuck that, bros. Let's go get the kanji tattoo for $20 each. So that's what we do. Then 20 years later, I cover them all up with sick panther tattoos while their kids are in the lobby, even though I told them kids couldn't come. Psych, the kids are with their wives and they don't have to worry about them because all the emotional labor is put on women. And I know that while I'm tattooing them. You know what? I've never once... had a guy ask if his kid could come or dragged a kid with. It's always women.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, him and his friends spot more $100 bills, but they're like laid out in a trail. Come find me. The trail of money leads them to a woman. She's dead, sprawled out, face up, with more money folded up and stuffed in her mouth. So now responders and, of course, SVU are on the scene. Benny and Toots go over to Corner Warner, and Toots is like, talk about putting your money where your mouth is, or whatever.
That's enough.
Yeah.
That's
calm
enough.
Down. Yeah, enough. Corner Warner found 5 $100 bills in the woman's mouth, and she isn't able to ID her yet. So the woman was raped and has a laceration on her head. However, it wasn't the head wound that killed her. Coroner Warner thinks she died of a heart attack based on the meds, digoxin, that was found near her.
Yeah.
She was scared to death when she was assaulted.
Ugh. Digoxin, I mean, the context lets you know, but it's a heart medication used in people with atrial fibrillation to regulate the amount of blood being pumped through their heart.
Mm-hmm. Toots asks Benson about the money in the victim's mouth. He's never seen that before. Benson thinks it was a twisted way of paying her. CSU Ryan O fucking Irish or whatever. I don't know what his thing is. He calls them over.
Ryan, let's get shamrocked, O'Halloran. I decided that he's bro-y Irish. He's like frat Irish.
Really? I don't feel him like that at all.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
You don't see
Ryan O changed the Chicago River green. Okay.
Ryan O, I'll take the shamrock flash. O'Halloran.
You're right. A bloody shoe print was found in another part of the courtyard. He, as in Ryan, called a canine unit to track the blood. So you see a dog, this is the canine unit, he's tracking the blood to an apartment and starts whining. Toots and Benson bang on the door. A woman answers and says, what the hell do you want? Benny and Toots just push her out of the way. They just pie face her down and ask her if she's alone. She says she is. Benson stays with the girl and Toots finds the shoe with dried blood on it and a purse full of $100 bills. The woman says she found the money. The shoe is hers. Benson tells her that she robbed a corpse. And the woman replies with, quote, she was dead. There was nothing I could do to help her. It's not like she's going to take it with her. And then Benson's like, neither can you. How fucked is that?
Yeah.
You just like rob a dead body. You don't even call the police.
I mean, the desperation there is pretty intense. I like to think that it's somebody's life circumstances and not people are garbage. But
if they were going to do that, they would have made it like a classic homeless person that was like on drugs or something, like some stereotype, not just some chick that lives in.
They still would have treated him like shit, though.
Yeah.
All right. Back at the crime lab. Benson and Stabler meet with Ryan. My grandparents are embarrassed. I drink green beer with my fraternity on St. Paddy's, O'Halloran. St. Paddy's is with 2 D's, by the way.
Okay.
I know that I've hit it before because every fucking year, my friend Emer, who's from Donegal. She's like, do it. Spell it with T's. So they're with O'Halloran. They're examining all the money from the scene, and there's $5,000 in total. Cragen doesn't want the press knowing about the cash, and they're thinking the victim was a sex worker, so Munch and Toots are out canvassing that population. Well, Ryan's got a little lead with a condom wrapper he found stuck to one of the
buildings. Ryan, kiss me, I am Irish t-shirt. He got it, Spencer's. Okay.
But he finds a condom wrapper, and he's like, ask if any of them use this brand. Benson notices the logo on the wrapper.
What? You're like... But he finds a condom wrapper, and you just said it so like, but anyways, so he finds his condom wrapper, right? There's a dead woman somewhere, whatever.
Oh my God.
4 minutes in.
All right. Ask him if anybody uses this brand. Benson notices the logo on the wrapper. It's from a local sex club run by women called The Box.
I love all of that.
Ryan, come again. Yeah. We didn't notice before, but there's a guy in the corner with a snare and a cymbal for this moment. He'd never had to use it before. Come again.
I love how Corner Warner is like, well, that's the idea, but.
So it's from this sex club. Also, I cannot imagine women running a sex club in the way that they then present it and calling it The Box. That screams straight dude. To me.
Yeah, the name would not, definitely not be that. What, what would it be? Cleopatra's or something like, I don't know.
Something, it'd be something classy and discreet and not fucking
The Box.
Floppy drip horny.
Yeah.
No woman is like, The Box, like it's.
Because this place was classy as fuck, yeah. And it was, it seemed like it was run very well. I liked the way that they ran it.
Legitimately, it wasn't like seedy, you know?
Yeah.
There's a porn shop in our area that is run by women, and there's like all of these ethical practices as far as the kind of porn they're willing to distribute and whatever.
Ooh.
And it's called A Woman's Touch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a great place. I used to order shit from there when I lived in Colorado because I could not find an equivalent.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say I couldn't find the equipment where I was.
I mean, actually.
They didn't have the kind of equipment I was looking for at fucking Jerk Off Jerry's or whatever the other.
Right.
All right.
Carl's cum hole or whatever.
Oh, gross. Spaghetti Sam Semen Emporium. Okay.
SSSE, baby, all the way. You can see that shit 5 miles away off the highway. It's right next to a fucking Cracker Barrel or whatever.
Okay, so the label of the condom indicates that it's from this sex club called The Box. So they decide that the sex could have been consensual. The club is a place where women go to live out their fantasies, and it was 3 blocks from the crime scene. They're really trying to make 3 blocks happen this episode. They do it more than once. Well, we go to The Box. Benson's walking and talking with the club owners, two women, gorge, professionally dressed.
They have like the pencil skirts. It's how I imagined if I had...
You as a madam.
Yes. Pencil skirt. They have Dobermans on chain. Well, they don't have that, but that's fine.
Yeah. They're walking past all these beds with pillows and sheer drapes and sexy lighting. It's very chic. There's literally a people like making the beds, like staff, and a guy walks by with this giant vase full of orchids. I'm like, this is run by women.
Yeah, it's not called The Box.
No.
It's probably called The Orchid.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean?
I was just going to say yes.
Yeah.
Benny's acting like she's considering joining. That's the part they're having her play. So these women are giving her the tour like they do when you join a gym. They explain to her that there are no rules as far as what you can get fantasy wise, but no sex happens at the club. What you do outside of here is your business, though. So people can get all fucking horned up and then go fuck in their car, but they just like don't, they're not doing anything illegal.
Yeah.
Because people paying for sex is illegal. To get into the club, people need to submit an erotic essay about their fantasies along with a photo to ensure that the applicants are height and weight proportionate. Gross.
I know.
And then the one goes, and you definitely passed that test. This one lady totally wants to bone Benson.
Yeah. No duh.
But he's like, I'm so used to this. She doesn't even acknowledge it. Photos are destroyed after you get in. Pseudonyms are used and All you have to do when you come in is show your membership card.
Mm-hmm.
Men cannot be members, but can be brought in as dates by members if those members are into guys.
Yeah.
I'm loving the energy of this club, minus the body shaming. That's the only part that I was like, ugh, God. They ask Benson if she wants to join, but she pulls out her badge instead. Like, I won't be joining. You'll be joining me downtown. No, she doesn't say anything like that. But and these women immediately are like, what we're doing isn't illegal. Honestly, like, it's so corporate. We both are wearing kitten heels. Like, what's your deal?
They absolutely are not wearing kitten heels. Don't say that. Don't ruin the whole thing.
I mean, professionally.
No.
Benson shows them a photo of the Jane Doe from the courtyard and tells them that she was killed nearby. And she asks if they recognize her. Turns out, just the night before, a girl complained that a guy got rough with her and the bouncer threw him out. Benny and Stabes are outside now chatting with the bouncer. He tells them that the girl told the guy to stop. And he didn't, so the guy was removed. Dude was pissed and kept shoving money in the bouncer's face to try and stay, but the bouncer was like, I can't be bribed. Fuck off.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this shit with you. The dude was hanging around outside then and told the bouncer he was waiting for the woman he went to the club with. And he wouldn't move on until the bouncer, quote, gave him some encouragement. When he said that, Stabler's eyes, he lit up like, OMG, I like beating up scummy guys too.
You tuned him up a little bit. We used to be able to do that. Yeah.
This is fun. You want to grab a beer?
Yeah. He had a big old smile on his face. He's like, I get what you're saying because I do bad things too.
Right. Yeah. I cross many lines.
I'm breaking a chair under a guy right now in my head as we speak.
I'm picturing the two of us in fucking luchador masks and in an illegal wrestling match.
Dude, how far can you throw a bunch of cups, dude? You know what I mean? How far? Probably pretty far. You're a pretty big guy.
What do you squat? Like 4,000 cups?
How fast can you run two blocks, dude? Pretty fast. Pretty fast. Ready, set, go. Guy's like, I'm at work.
Benson's like, so are you. Get back here.
Here's my phone number. Call me later.
So when the bouncer was roughing up the guy, he looked in his bag where he found cuffs, a whip, and a big ass knife. The bouncer gave him his stuff back after he went through his bag, except for the knife. And the guy whined about needing it for work because he's a chef at a nearby restaurant. Soriello's. Let's go there.
Sure.
Benny and Stabes find the chef in the restaurant kitchen. He is beat to shit, saying, oh, my God, that little bitch called the cops. It was just a game, a little master-slave action. She asked him to play and had a leash around her neck. She got sassy, so I lashed her with my crap. Okay. Mm. She got mad about that and had the security guy beat him up. This is his story. I don't get off on being hurt. Which I'm mocking him, but like, yes, there are very defined roles in a lot of people's kink stuff.
There's so much communication.
But yeah. He was not respecting, he clearly was not respecting boundaries in this either. So he says he went home and iced his face alone by himself. He calls the girl Lola and says that she'll calm down and drop the charge and be ready for him after experiencing the scene for a few months.
Yeah, he's like, I'll call her and she'll calm down. She's just like new. You're stupid.
Yeah. Stabler shows him a picture of Jane Doe and asks him, is this Lola? And it's not.
They show him a picture of a fucking dead body. And he's like, I like it rough, but not that rough. And that's not Lola. And you're like, that's your response to seeing a dead body on a slab? Make a little joke?
Right.
Okay.
I like it rough, but not that rough. Get it? She's dead. I didn't kill her. I got fucking meatballs to prep. Get out of here.
Yeah. This is a Denny's, sir. Leave. Okay, so Benny and Stabe leave the restaurant. Benson's on the phone. Apparently, the club says that five women use Lola as their code name, but only one is African-American. Her real name is Sarah Miller. She's an ad executive. Toots is checking on her whereabouts right now. Stabler thinks that their Jane Doe is Sarah Miller. Benny gets another call from Toots. Guess what? Sarah Miller never showed up for work. Benny and Stabes knock on the door of Sarah Miller's apartment, and at first, nobody answers. Then a woman calls out, and Stabler shows his badge to the people, and she opens the door. It's Sarah Miller.
This woman has been on all of the crime shows. SVU Trial by Jury, Damages, Law and Order Regular, The Wire, Chicago PD, Chicago Fire, Chicago Med.
She tells them that she's taken 6 showers since the night before. She was so upset about what happened that she called in sick from work. She says at a party, a man attacked her. She was flirting with him. Then he got rough with her, grabbed her and made her get on her knees and put his junk in her face. Gross. Then when she started to leave, he started to whip her. Benson asked if she remembers seeing him with any other women, but after it happened, she hid in the bathroom until her friend told her that he was gone. Earlier, she did see him hitting on other women. Benson shows Sarah the picture of Jane Doe. Sarah knows her. She's the girl that kept her company in the bathroom. Jane Doe was the bathroom attendant at the club. Oh my God. So now we're back in Coroner Warner's office. She uncovers Jane Doe's face. The body is identified by her dad. Her name is Marguerite. Her dad is so sad. Ugh. And he's caressing her face. When Marguerite didn't come home, he thought she went straight to her other job. She also worked as a cleaner in an office building and had never missed a day. Dad asked Coroner Warner if Marguerite suffered. And she tells him that Marguerite would have died very quickly from her massive heart attack and didn't suffer at all. He said that Marguerite's heart has always been weak since she was a child because of rheumatic fever. And then he starts weeping. Oh my God. Stabler tells him that they're going to take him home.
Benny and Stabes pull up to Mr. Beauclair's building to drop him off where all these people are having a candlelight vigil for his daughter. A woman gives Mr. Beauclair her condolences and says his wife had called her. So I'm assuming she put it all together. Then she calls out to the detectives that it took a murder to get their attention. This is actor Rita Moreno. She's a fucking EGOT winner. Her first credit was in 1950 and her most recent credit was in 2023.
Holy shit, she's still going? Damn.
Yes, you might recognize her from 55 episodes of Oz as Sister Peter Marie Raimondo, mm-hmm. or Anita in the original West Side Story. I'll give you a minute.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Oh my God, my whole body. Mm-hmm. Hold on. Oh, my arms. Oh.
Your mom pops her head in. Gabe, relax.
I'm going to barf.
She was also in Slums of Beverly Hills, one of my absolute favorite movies, Natasha Lyonne. Anyway, she's got 173 credits and counting. She's at 92.
I cannot believe that's her.
Yes.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Here, her name is Mildred Quintana. She runs the New Americans Justice Center and says that the PD doesn't care about undocumented women. Stabler tells her that they don't care what a victim status is. But Mildred lets him fucking have it. Oh, really? Is that why the sick son of a bitch is still raping women in my community? Benson wants to know why Mildred thinks the women were all attacked by the same man. And she looks at her like, are you fucking kidding? You found money on the body, didn't you? Mm. And she says it's so matter of fact, like, hello, everybody knows this pattern. And Benny and Staves are looking at her like, we don't.
Mm.
Over at the precinct, they brought Mildred in for questioning. The perp has attacked 16 women in the community over 3 years, all undocumented cleaning women that were on their way home from work. And Benny goes, so why didn't you come to us? Are you fucking kidding?
I know. As soon as she said that, I was like, you're going to get fucking chewed out, Benson.
So why didn't you come to us? Oof. She did. She went to the local PD, told them what was happening, and even gave a description of the perp, and they told her that they couldn't do anything without a victim statement. And then Stabler goes, yeah, we can't do anything either if we don't have a victim statement. Mildred tells the detectives that the women are too scared to come forward based on their immigration status. Benson wants to be able to explain to those women that SVU is not the same as immigration, and they really want to talk to them. But where they're from, the police can't be trusted. I mean, where we're from, the place can't be perfect.
I know. I just wrote,
even though I don't want to equate the corruption.
I don't want to downplay like the stuff that, yeah.
Anyway, Stabler tells her that that's exactly why this perp will continue to attack these women. If she wants their help, she needs to give them the victims' names. Now the detectives go to chat with the victims because she did give them some names. It's just a series of doors being slammed in their faces, but Benson's able to convince one woman to talk. She tells her that Mildred sent her because she knows Benson can help her.
Mm-hmm.
The woman's name is Nina Zergen, and she lets her in. Nina wasn't going to tell anyone, but it hurt to keep it inside. That's why she told Mildred. Benson tells her it'll get better with counseling, but Nina doesn't want to go because she's afraid of being cast out of her community. Mm-hmm. She's Muslim from Bosnia. Very different the way they look at it. She lives with her brother Milan and tells Benson to leave before he comes home. Benson promises that her brother won't find out and asks Nina to tell her what happened. She needs Nina's help to stop the rapist and tells her about Marguerite's death. Mm-hmm. Nina's really struggling, but tells her story. So she works nights cleaning offices. When she came up from the subway, she was dragged into an alley and raped. She saw his face and he smiled at her after and said, thank you. Then he handed her cash like she was a sex worker. It was more money than she makes in 6 months. She felt dirty about it and hasn't spent any of the money. She's thought about burning it, actually. So she gives Benson the money because she doesn't even want it. She's glad to get rid of it, which is a real shame because she could probably use it.
Yeah.
Milan comes home early. Benson switches gears and tells him that, oh, she's just out looking for witnesses from a hit and run the night before. Thanks for your help. Sorry you didn't see anything. See you later. Let me know if you do. Bye.
Yeah.
But his face is like, sure about that?
I know. Okay, so Benny and Stabes go to the crime lab. The money from Nina was still in the paper bundles from the bank. It hasn't been in circulation yet. So CSU, this, I think it's Ryan, right? Ryan O'Fucking. So CSU should be able to get prints off of them. Ryan sprays a solution on the bills and applies some heat. Some good prints are found, man. Two hits on the prints come up, and there's a third set, which is probably from Nina. One is Tobias Gaines, who works at the bank, so he was probably the teller. The others belong to Jason Whitaker, an attorney. His prints were taken by the Bar Association, so that's why they have them in the system. At the law offices of Granger, McCullum, and Kerstetter, Benny and Staves walk into Jason's office. Oh my God, it's younger Bradley Cooper.
Fucking A-list actor. He plays a D-bag like nobody else.
Yeah. Jason is playing online poker in his office like a fucking dork, but whatevs. Me saying but whatevs was supposed to be like, to anybody that likes online poker, I'm sorry.
Oh.
That's what that means. I'm like a dork, but whatever. Sorry.
Whatever. Like what you like. Just don't be this about it. That's all.
Yeah. Stabler introduces himself and Benson as detectives. He looks kind of concerned and like looks around his office and asks what he can do for them. Benny asks where he was last night. He responds with, nowhere exciting, that's for sure. He asks what they're investigating and how his name came up. They tell him his prints came up on some money in a rape homicide. He tells him that he doesn't have an answer for why his prints are on the money. It just seems to be going like this back and forth thing, and Stabler isn't liking it. So Stabler threatens to bring him in, and he tells him, you can't. And I have nothing more to say. And then I'm like, ooh, it's too early for this, but he's the famous guy in the show, so it's got to be him. Or was he famous then?
He was.
To the internet. Was he famous then?
I mean, he was very up and coming. Was this after Wedding Crashers? Yes.
He was such a piece of shit in Wedding Crashers.
He that set the table for my opinion of Bradley Cooper for a hot minute.
When he beats that guy up outside, and this is at his engagement party, mm-hmm. and he's like, you see that hot chick looking at me? His friends are like, don't go to her. And he's like, yeah, you're right. I'm fucking Cooper. She'll come to me or something. And I was like, I hate you. Remember?
Yeah. In that movie, his name is Sack Lodge. They call him in Sack Lodge. And he's like, and then I wiped the oil off the baby seal's face. And he's like,
yeah. Okay. Stabler goes to talk to Novak. She's in her little like sex crime softball league t-shirt.
Also, this is like a classic. This is used a lot. And at the time, it wasn't a joke. She's packing up her fucking backpack.
She's pumped.
Because she's on the softball team.
Yeah, she loves playing on this league.
Sex crimes.
I think the first time we see her, she's like, oh, Detective Stabler, ready to get your ass kicked in softball again by me because I'm love softball or whatever? Mm-hmm. He's like, no, I'm not here for that. Novak. Stabler doesn't really think that the rapist is Whitaker, but he may have been involved. He seemed pretty rattled when they told him that his prints were on that money. Novak thinks Whitaker won't talk because he's covering for a client. Maybe he gave the money to the client who is the rapist. Novak says, quote, he tries to clear himself. He's pointing the finger at his client and he can't do that. Stabler wants to subpoena for a client list. Novak asks what firm Whitaker works at. And one of the partners is Lionel Granger. And she's like, oh.
Holy shit. Lionel Granger. Cut to Novak sitting on a bench in the courthouse hallway waiting for Granger. Remember, we met defense attorney Lionel Granger in season 5 in 3 episodes, and he's going to be around till season 11.
Mm-hmm.
Novak stops him and says she wants to ask about Jason Whitaker. And Granger's like, oh, do you need me to call you a plumber for that flooded basement? So she just pretends to have a boner for Whitaker to get the tea on him.
Yeah, she was like,
eh. Whitaker's probably going to make partner. He's a great lawyer, blah, 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 blah. He's on retainer for the Duval family's trust, which is a big fucking deal. Mm-hmm. You know the Duval family, as in Clay Duval of the ball-bearing fortune?
No, I know. I was like, what? That's what you got, a ball bearing. That's the thing. Okay.
That's, yeah, cool. That's, there's a lot of people in New York with money, but the Duvalls. Eleanor Duval took a real shine to Jason. Oh my God, does she need a plumber too? She's super generous with her money because the family's dying out. She has a son, Gabriel, who Granger describes as someone who can, quote, discuss quantum physics but can't balance his checkbook.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from the jump off point of us meeting Gabriel, who I wanted to call Gabe, but I didn't want to confuse everybody.
Yeah.
They're presenting a person the way that they presented Rain Man.
Yeah, like a savant, like a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they didn't have the words for... Like, I mean, this is almost 20 years ago. So the way that this was talked about 20 years ago is crazy different than the mm-hmm. spectrum that it is now. But this doesn't make sense with what they're selling.
Yeah.
It's weird. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. The whole episode, like I said, I was like, where's the part two? Because this isn't right. This doesn't make any sense.
And it doesn't feel like an intentional distraction.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't tie together and make any sense. But anyway.
It had to have been intended for a second part and just didn't happen. It's gotta, I don't know.
I don't know. It's like weirdly open-ended, like that fucking Angel cold cure lady. I don't know.
Yeah.
Over at the Duval residence, Stabler is going to meet with Eleanor, the mom. Holy bed knobs and broomsticks. It's Angela goddamn Lansbury.
Yeah.
Most well known for Murder, She Wrote. She was a working actor from 1944 until she passed in 2022. As Eleanor, she's a fancy rich lady of a certain age.
I didn't know that she passed.
Yeah. Stabes tells her that he's looking for her son. She informs him that Gabriel hasn't lived there in years. Stabler pretends that he's there because Gabriel has a bunch of unpaid parking tickets because they mm-hmm. send detectives in trench coats in these matters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She isn't surprised and says that he has all the money he needs but can't remember to pay the bills. She offers to write a check for the unpaid tickets, but Stabler tells her that Gabriel has to come down in person and deal with it himself. So she gives Stabes Gabriel's address.
Right. So Stabler's at Gabriel's house. And oh my God, this is fucking Frida's philandering husband in the movie Frida, isn't it?
Yes, this is Alfred Molina. Have we had an episode this full of huge stars yet?
Packed? No. But he was also in a Spider-Man. He was like the
Dr. Octavius.
Yeah.
Doc Ock. So he's got 224 credits, this guy. He's in Da Vinci Code, Spider-Man 2, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Chocolat, Coffee and Cigarettes. He does a ton of voiceover work now.
He was in Coffee and Cigarettes? I don't remember.
I don't remember either, but it was a movie that I was like, oh, I remember that movie. But yeah, I don't remember him in it.
I think the first time I ever noticed him in something was the first time I watched Frida, and I was like, who is this guy? He's awesome. Then seeing that he was in lots of other stuff, just like smaller roles. Gabriel tells Stabler that he knows he paid for the parking tickets, and he's running around frantically looking for receipts. This guy says that he builds algorithms, and his house is cluttered with computers and all the stuff. He's trying to teach computers to, quote, see like humans do with, like, optical clues. He's kind of just going on and on about his work, but really only he understands what's going on with the work, you know? Stabler's like, oh, cool, yeah, computer, sure, yeah. Stabler tells him that he will need to come down to the precinct. Gabriel's totally frantic and says he only has 2 hours until he has to be back. And Stabler's like, oh, don't worry, it'll only take like 15 minutes. Lies. We know that's a lie.
That's a lie.
Stabler calls Benson to tell her to go get Nina and bring her to the department. Remember Nina, she's the victim they spoke to that gave the money back to Benson. Just a little. Mm-hmm. Benson's at Nina's house. She knocks on the door, but her brother answers. He's fucking angry. He says he saw Nina arrested 2 hours before. Two cops with guns put her in a car. He can't figure out why Benson is asking where Nina is because he's like, I just saw you. He thinks the cops did this. And she's like, dude, I did not take your sister. But who did?
Back at the precinct, Benny rolls in to where Cragen is on the other side of the glass in his... Well, this is just the other side of the glass. Just then, Mikey Day comes in with a giant knife and yells, "Is it cake?" and cuts into Cragen, exposing the layers of funfetti and chocolate ganache inside.
Oh my God. I knew it. I was wondering what you were going to do. I was hoping that you were going to do one. Is it cake?
There's a new season of Is It Cake, and that's what the kids were watching when I was doing these notes. Benson tells Cragen that neighbors said they saw Nina getting arrested just like her brother had said. No arrests are in the system, though, and Nina didn't show up at work. The FBI doesn't have her. Cragen checked. Mm. They turn the conversation to Gabriel and Stabes, who are in the interrogation room. Cragen says Gabriel is talking obsessively about computers and won't stop, and Stabler's going to snap because that has nothing to do with being a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Mildred, the woman at the vigil who went to the cops, shows up. She just walks into Cragen's office. Where are the desk cops? Being like, "Hi, can we help you?" Mm-hmm. She sees Gabriel through the glass and asks if he's the reason Nina is missing, because it's clearly the only investigation happening at a bustling Manhattan fucking police station.
Right.
Cragen closes the blinds and tells her she shouldn't be there, but she's already jumped to conclusions and says, "Well, Nina's gone in some terrible way. You have a suspect. I never should have given you those names." Benny assures her that they're gonna find Nina and the rapist. In the interview room, Gabriel tells Stabler he needs to go. He can't be late for dinner. His glucose levels can't drop. When Stabler tells him he can get him something to eat, Gabriel can't deviate from his routine. It's meatloaf night at the diner he goes to. Mm-hmm. He's going down in detail what goes with that meatloaf. He also explains that he can't disrupt his schedule because it will affect his research. Gabriel mm-hmm. is talking and explaining very quickly. Again, he's playing this the same way Dustin Hoffman played Rain Man, for sure.
Yeah, it's like the early 2000 Hollywood version of an autistic person, what yeah. they think an autistic person would be like, which is
right.
sometimes true, sometimes not. I mean, there's a huge...
Right. Stabler keeps trying to get him to hold on, and as he opens the door to go grab Gabriel a soda, Whitaker just strolls right in. Gabriel's too smart for your tricks. He's not going to leave his DNA on a can for you like that. Duh. Whitaker leaves with Gabriel while Gabriel's telling him he lost his wallet. Then he asks Whitaker if he can drop him off at the diner. He keeps talking about the meatloaf that he wants to have for dinner, invites him to sit with him, all of that. Mm-hmm. That's what his focus is. As they walk by, Mildred sees them. Mildred starts to shout at Gabriel and follows them over to the elevator. And Gabriel gets confused as Whitaker shuffles him onto the elevator. Stabes blocks her from following them, but she keeps shouting, "The police may be through with you, but I'm just getting started. You're going to pay for what you've done." The mm-hmm. look on Gabriel's face is complete confusion. This mm-hmm. is... There's not one indication that he has any knowledge of this portion of what's going on, you know? Yeah. Like, they end up painting him like he's this fucking mastermind, but they're missing the Kaiser Sose part of it.
Yeah, definitely.
That's enough critiquing the writers. Like, we don't do shit. This is not our job.
I draw on people.
We are Donald Trump judging a beauty pageant right now. We're like, I don't know, she looks a little flabby. Like, fuck you. Yeah. Okay, so Gabriel's totally confused. Whitaker's shuffling him onto the elevator. Whitaker threatens to have Mildred arrested for harassment. Mildred comes back at him and he yells, "You're out of your league. Why don't you just stick with your, quote, wet back washer women?"
Oh my God.
And the elevator door closes. Then it opens back up and he goes, "Hey." Mildred turns around, "What? I just wanted to take another look at you." In the shallow.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
She's Lady Gaga. What?
I haven't seen that.
Really? Oh my yeah, God. No. I only watched it once and I cried so hard.
What? Does he die or something? I think he does, right?
Spoiler. It's just really sad. Trigger warning. It's very sad. Mildred leaves. That part didn't happen. Okay, the doors close. He's racist. Mildred leaves to take the stairs down.
Why even say that? Like, why?
Because
his... I'm like, why be racist?
Benson asks Stabler if he told Whitaker that Nina was undocumented. He didn't. So she wonders why Whitaker made that comment, the racist thing. Somebody's been leaking info on the case to Whitaker. He had Nina taken.
Mm.
The rat at the precinct could be anybody, so we better have Munch check the walls. But first, let's hit ICE, because that's obviously where Nina is.
Yeah.
At Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Benny's walking through. There's all these cells, all of these women who are being held before they're deported. And she finds Nina. Nina's being deported back to Bosnia, but she has no one and nothing there. So she's kind of freaking out.
Yeah. Her parents died right in the war and her brother's here.
Yeah. Nina's convinced it was Benson's fault, and Benson begs her not to stop trusting her. They have a suspect and need her help. Mm-hmm. And Nina's like, cool, I need help too. Get me out.
Right. Meanwhile, Novak is talking with an immigration agent. Nina applied for political asylum 3 years ago, but it was denied, and she disappeared before she could get deported. She was linked to a radical Islamic cell via an anonymous tip to their hotline. Novak says that the mystery caller is the lawyer from the man that raped her. The agent asks if she can prove it. If she can charge him with witness tampering. The agent says that he can't take away Nina's deportation orders, though. They're legal. His hands are tied. Novak tells him that the Violence Against Women Act has a clause that allows for temporary asylum for victims of a crime. He tells her to draw the paperwork and Nina can be released. Cut to Nina and Novak walking out of the buildings together. They're doing a little walk and talk. Nina is pumped that she's temporarily legal now. Novak is going to help her petition for permanent asylum after the trial. Stabler and her brother Milan are over by a car. Benson comes up to Nina, and then Nina asks Benson if she told her brother that she was raped. Of course Benson didn't, but tells her she probably should. And I'm like, I don't know if that's a good idea.
I wouldn't recommend that if you don't know much about the culture.
Yeah. Nina walks over to the car and Milan gives her hijab back. And they hug because they're brother and sister. Novak is introduced to Milan and he's super thankful. They're going to be taken home by Benson and Stabler. Novak's not coming with. She's got a stop to make and looks all serious and walks away like there was an explosion behind her and she doesn't care. You know what I mean? Cut to Whitaker's smarmy little office. She barges in and he's so... Ugh. He's like, Casey, oh, my boss said you were interested, but you don't waste time. And like does that little nose laugh straight to the moon.
You little eager beaver. That's what I'm calling my club.
I'm calling it the box. She's like, ew. She tells him that she needs Gabriel for a lineup for the case of the rape victim he was trying to have conveniently deported. And then Novak's like, Nina's not going anywhere. I got her fucking out. Ew. Whitaker gets up and gets kind of close to her face. And he's like, oh, so where are we going tonight? A little dinner? She tells him that he's going to special victims. She made him a reservation. Whitaker looks a little worried as Novak walks out.
At the precinct, they're doing a little lineup. The background music guys actually won an award for the swelliest swell in this scene. They won a swelly.
Oh, I love you. You wrote that down, I hope.
Not the swelly part.
Ooh.
They won a That's swelly.
That was my favorite part. They won a swelly.
Oh. Just enjoy it, Tasha. It takes a minute, but Nina identifies Gabriel as her rapist, and Benson comforts her as she cries. It takes a lot.
And Whitaker is in the room, and she didn't freak out, so it's not him.
Yeah. Afterwards, Novak and Whitaker are doing a walk and talk. She tells him Gabriel is going down. Whitaker thinks that Nina is IDing Gabriel because he's wealthy and in the society pages, so publicly recognizable. Mm-hmm. Novak says, we've got the money, remember? Whitaker argues, yeah, with my prints on it, not his. What are you going to charge me now? Come on, you got nothing.
That's true, though.
It is true.
His prints aren't on it.
No.
And if he killed him and stuffed the money, his fucking fingerprints would be on there.
Unless he wore gloves.
Oh, yeah.
Stabes happens to be walking Gabriel out in cuffs at the same time. Gabriel looks to Whitaker to do something for him so that he doesn't have to get put in jail. Just then, Mrs. Duval shows up. Whitaker tells her everything's under control. You didn't need to come down. It's fine. Well, it doesn't look under control to me, she says as she looks over her tiny glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Gabriel tells her that they think he's committed a crime. Mrs. Duval tells him that Whitaker is going to fix it. My sweet boy, don't worry. Mm-hmm. Whitaker looks at Novak and...
Buster, zip me up.
Zip me up, Buster. Oh my gosh, yeah. She is so Lucille Bluth.
Yeah.
Whitaker looks at Novak and kind of tells more than asks, Gabriel will be coming home with us, won't he? And Novak tells them to let Gabriel go. And I'm like, what?
Mm.
At the elevator, Gabriel blows his nose... and his mom makes him throw away the tissue.
Because he puts it in his pocket and she's like, that's disgusting.
Throw it away. Mm-hmm. All the while, the award-winning swell makers show us why they make the big bucks. Okay? It's, I mean, you can barely hear the dialogue. It's like, woo! It's so fucking...
woo!
It's echolocation. Ooh! Like, over the entire scene. They get on the elevator. Stabler's like, ha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha, and takes the tissue out of the trash. So Stabler pulls the tissue out of the trash. Didn't catch that one, did you, crab cakes? That was a Wedding Crashers joke. But Stabler, back to critiquing them, he pulls it out with his bare hands.
I know, that's insane.
Which is not protocol, and it's also super fucking gross because you're reaching into the trash for a snot rag. Blech.
Do not have gloves, because every time you guys go somewhere and you need gloves, you pull them out of your fucking jacket pocket. You're in the middle of a cop shop. You're in the middle of a police station. Right. You can't be like, glove me. And somebody's like.
The things you have the most of there are latex gloves and coffee cups. Like, that is what is lining the halls.
It's like in the 50s when a beautiful woman pulls out a cigarette and 50 guys have the lighters. That's what it should be like with gloves.
Exactly. So in Coroner Warner's office, they're examining the tissue. Not only did the tissue have his DNA from him blowing his nose, but there was also mascara and foundation on it. Marguerite's makeup was smeared all over her face at the crime scene, so it was her tissue, is what they're saying. Coroner Warner needs time to find the brands and make the connection. This is also dumb.
Yeah.
This is also dumb. This is flog full of diamonds dumb.
Yeah. And I'm surprised because Coroner Warner's a woman and she wouldn't be like, oh my God, this is Maybelline. Like, thank God we hired women or we'd never know it was Lillian Bergamot. Benny's with Novak in Novak's office and they're having a chat. It's really dark in there. This is the first time I've really been like, okay, it's really dark. And then later when Benny comes back, she turns the light and I'm like, why did they have the light off the whole time they were in there? Okay. If the tissue is what links Gabriel to the rape, the case won't go to trial. Benson wonders if Nina will still get asylum if she doesn't have to testify because, you know, with immigration, there was the temporary asylum for people who were in the middle of a crime thing. Novak thinks Nina's going to be fine, but she'll check with immigration. Just on the phone rings. Ooh, she has a flower delivery. Ooh, she's like, I bet you they're from fucking Whitaker. Benson's like, I'm going to go get coffee. Okay, I'll be back in 3 shakes of a lamb tail. Whatever, Gabe. Novak's just standing up doing some shit and you see the flowers are being brought in and you think it's like Benson or something, but it's like a dude in a mask and he fucking starts beating the shit out of Novak. She's fighting back and this dude is like kicking her in the stomach. I mean, he's really like, they did a really good job.
Yeah, that was a really crazy fight scene.
Yeah, she's fighting back in front and he's trying to get up, but he keeps fucking whatever. He knocks her head on the desk and she's unconscious. Benson comes back and she's like, oh my God, this coffee shop was 3 blocks away. There was only anything that was open in fucking New York City was 3 blocks away. 3, I said.
3 blocks.
And then she's like, if you fucking left, I'm going to be so pissed. And then turns the light on that should have already been on because they were occupying the room and sees Novak on the floor. So now, fast forward, Novak is taken out on a stretcher. Stabler shows up as she's being put in the ambulance. Benson tells him the perp was gone when she got there. So he needs to go check security cameras. And Benson rides with Novak to the hospital. Who? Stabler knocks on Gabriel's apartment door. Obviously, Gabriel opens the door and Stabler just barges in, which I don't think you can do.
No.
Remember, you're dealing with rich people. You're going to get in trouble. Stabler tells him to show him his hands and then he grabs him. There's nothing on his hands. So he's like, oh, all right, you wore gloves. Okay. Gabriel tells him that Stabler has to leave him alone and threatens to call Whitaker. He's really upset. He literally has no clue what's going on. There's not even like a, you know how when somebody's guilty, they'll do like a little side smile or like a, you know, something like, you're never going to catch me.
Or like an overact of like, so that...
Something to let the audience know that the guy is the guy, you know?
And so that you can even go back and go, oh, this was a little Easter egg to let us know that we didn't catch on the first watch, you know? But it's
right.
Not even...
Nothing. Stabler tells him to go ahead and call Whitaker or his mommy. He's like, they can't protect you from me. If my new best friend that works at the Orchid, he pops around. He's like, hey. And they're like, there's a pole in between them. And they're doing that enough thing back and forth over it. Did you see that?
No.
I did. Stabler asks Gabriel where he was tonight, and he starts compulsively talking about how he just got back from the diner and what his food was, which was roasted chicken, cream corn, and carrots, which sounds actually really good right now.
This diner he goes to is run by my grandmother.
Right. The diner didn't look like what I thought it was going to look like when he went there.
No, same.
Yeah. I was like, this isn't a diner. This is a restaurant.
Yeah.
Stabler tells him to shut up and throws his coat at him and tells him he better pray somebody saw him at that diner. And Stabler walks out, but leaves the door open. At the hospital, Novak is hooked up to monitors. She wakes up when Benson comes in. She has a concussion and some broken ribs. She's just fucking beat up. She doesn't remember anything about what happened. She doesn't even remember her and Benson in her office talking or Benson leaving to get coffee. She just remembers the afternoon. Ugh. She starts crying and asks Benson if she was raped, which she wasn't. Dude, I have not seen the lawyer cry, Novak or whatever. She was really good.
She was so good. She did such an amazing job.
Yeah. Benson tells her that they're going to find out who did it and that Stabler is reviewing the security footage.
Cut to Stabler reviewing the footage with DA investigator Hector Salazar. This fucking guy is in so much stuff. The Thin Red Line, Boiler Room, Band of Brothers. He's Miguel in 46 episodes of Oz. Charlie in 34 episodes of Fringe. He's in The Walking Dead, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Whoa, 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 whoa. The Walking Dead. What's his name?
He plays Mitch Dolgan in 2 episodes of The Walking Dead. I fucking knew you were going to ask, and I put it in parentheses just in case.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I ended up going back to my old ways for this episode because it was just every single person.
He's been in so much shit. Yeah.
An insane career, if not already since this episode. So it's just wild.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at the tape, we see the security desk. The flower delivery guy comes in with the bouquet of flowers, but it's obstructing his face.
Mm-hmm.
The perp just scribbled on the log, and the security guard can't describe him because he doesn't remember. Great job securing, officer. Mm-hmm. The guy wore gloves, so there were no prints.
You can't remember somebody that brought in like 3 dozen roses?
At a time when nobody's coming to the office?
Yeah. Him, like, covering his face made me think it was Jason's. I'm like, he knows where the cameras are in that place.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was him, too.
Mm-hmm.
So the next camera that they cut to that they're watching is at the elevator. When the dude gets there, he's waiting for the elevator door. He glances up at the camera. Uh-oh, it's not Gabriel. It's Milan, Nina's brother. So they bring him in for questioning.
Mm.
I didn't check him before, but this guy has a crazy long list of credits, too. It's like everybody from this episode got super successful, right? Mm.
Or was already.
Angela Lansbury.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
And the other lady, Anita.
Oh, yeah. Mildred. So Milan is in for questioning. Staves walks in with his stone cold Steve Austin, year past curfew face that totally works on his teen daughters and also perps most of the time. But Milan tells Stabler he's not scared of him. He was tortured in Bosnia by fucking murder squads. So
yeah.
He's not even like sassy about it. He's just like, I'm not really sure what you think you're doing, but it's not giving what you think it's giving, sweetie.
Yeah.
So Stabler goes, then doing a hard 20 in Attica shouldn't be a problem for ya. Milan says that Novak got what she deserved. She made his sister untouchable and took away her future. And Stabler asks, how did she do that?
Yeah.
Milan tells him that Nina was forced to relive her humiliation in public and insists that she was shamed and her family was shamed for her not being a virgin. He got her honor back when he attacked Novak. Okay. I know that. No. Cut it any way you want. Squares, triangles, cultural difference. Toxic misogyny is toxic misogyny. You're not going to convince me that this is okay regardless of culture. You're just not. You're not.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that earlier in the episode, Nina was saying that when she was worried about him coming home is since they moved to the U.S., he's gotten more like traditional. So I know that with like, you know, other religions besides Christianity, it's like it's got the same stuff where there's like those real psycho fundamentalists that do a bunch of fucking shit, you know, like pipe bombs and Planned Parenthoods and shit.
Right.
And then there's.
Oh, yeah.
In the Muslim
sure.
world, too. I mean, everybody. There's like,
well, that's just a good point to make in general that
not all like, yeah,
yeah. I'm not going, this is what being Muslim is, you know, this
right.
is what the, like, no, it's not. It's on the spectrum that goes too far. That includes victimizing a population, controlling with fear.
I can't imagine being raped and then blamed for it and then blaming myself for it.
And then accepting all of the abuse that comes with somebody else's actions against you that you had no control over. But that is a good point to make. Nobody is saying anything about, like, practice whatever you want. Just don't hurt other people. Like, that's,
yeah,
it's,
no,
it
yeah,
seems
you don't
really
get to...
simple. But anyway.
Okay, keep going.
So Stabler tells Milan that he's no better than the man that raped Nina. That was to get a reaction, which he did. Milan swings at Stabler. Stabler fucking loves it, dives out of the way, grabs Milan and pushes him down onto the table. Milan says he should have killed Novak and his sister will never testify, as he's cuffed by Stabler and a side cop who strangely looks like Elon Musk to me.
I didn't even notice that guy.
Yeah. Craigan comes in and tells Stabler to get in his office. Oh my God.
This pissed me off so fucking bad. I'm like, the way that they fucking bow down to rich people and how they treat the homeless people, it's the classism in this. They were like legit scared.
Oh yeah.
I mean, she's like, I have friends that are your bosses.
Right. In Craigan's office, Mrs. Duval is there wearing a funeral fascinator with black mesh like a fancy widowed cartoon cat from a 50s Disney movie.
Cute.
You barged into my son's house in the middle of the night. You threatened him. Stabler says that he was investigating Novak's attack, but Mrs. Duval says Gabriel didn't do it, and Stabes would know that if he'd actually investigated.
Isn't Gabriel like 40?
Yeah, but she's Lucille Bluth, and he's Buster. So
yeah.
You want your belt to buckle, not your chair. Mrs. Duval goes on to tell him that his 20 years as a cop is commendable, and then asks him if he likes his job. Mm-hmm. Ooh. I sense a powerful old lady with money threat coming. The police commissioner and the mayor are her friends. Don't make me call them. I want to cry, but I can't spare the moisture. She wants Stabler to stay away from her son, but also apologize to him. And Cragen says that it may be inappropriate for Stabler to have further contact with Gabriel and tells Duval to tell Gabriel about the apology. Mm. What she was requesting was basically, you shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
Yeah.
Which is also from Wedding Crashers.
Yeah.
Nice. Mm. She leaves and Cragen shuts the door behind her. Stabler's about to grovel to his captain, but Cragen tells him to fucking save it. I probably would have thrown Gabriel out a window. Mm-hmm. Stabes tells Cragen that getting Nina's testimony might be a problem. Stabler offers to talk to Nina because if she backs out, Gabriel walks. But Cragen thinks Novak should do it. So she does. Novak goes to Nina's apartment. The extent of her bruising is jarring. So we're holding the camera behind Novak's head as Nina cracks the door open. Mm-hmm. She tells Novak that she promised her brother she wouldn't talk to anyone and goes to close the door. Novak sticks her cane in because she has a fucking cane from what her brother did.
Yeah.
Sticks her cane in the door and says, I know how hard it was for you to tell me what happened, and I know what it's done to your family, but nothing is going to stop me from prosecuting the man who raped you, implying even your fucking brother beating the shit out of me isn't going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nina asks Novak what she wants her to do. She wants Nina to testify in front of the grand jury. Once they get the indictment, they can arrest Gabriel.
Novak returns to work. Whitaker rushes up to her and he tells her that he's sorry about what happened. And she's like, save it, nerd. Whitaker gives her a subpoena and tells her that he's getting her removed from the case because he wants her as a defense witness. He presented it like, oh, sorry, bye, and like ran off. He's like, oh, sorry, you got beat up. Here, bye.
Also, you still look hot. Bye.
I still want to get drinks and dinner. Okay, bye. Now, Casey's at the office of the assistant district attorney. Dude said that this is a hell of a strategy by Whitaker. He says, quote, Nina lost her virginity, was afraid of what her traditional Muslim brother would do if he found out, so she lied about being raped. That's the thing Whitaker's trying to do. Whitaker's using Milan's attack on Novak to build up a case about Milan being violent and Nina being afraid of him, so she made up being raped by Gabriel. Novak thinks that she can win, but her boss is taking the case away from her. What? She's like, don't, man. Please. But he can tell that she's too emotionally involved. Dude, Stabler gets to do whatever he wants. Okay, whatever.
Whatever the fuck he wants. As long as the emotion is anger and you have a dick, it's fine.
Yeah. The case was already reassigned to Tracy Kiber. She's a lawyer that specializes in homicide cases, and Novak doesn't think that she'll handle it properly because she's not used to live victims. Tracy won't be able to relate to Nina, and her boss says, well, she'll have to. She's putting Nina in front of a grand jury tomorrow. Fuck. Novak goes to meet with the ADA, Tracy Kiber.
Oh my fucking God. Again, welcome back, actor B.B. Newworth, a.k.a. Lilith from Cheers, a.k.a. Nina Laszlo from SVU Season 1, Episode 3. Fucking star-studded. Season 6, Episode 20.
Yeah.
Night of a Thousand Stars. SVU.
Tracy is giving Nina a little pep talk, and they're about to go into the grand jury. Novak walks up, and Nina is super happy to see her. So they're called in. Novak waits outside. Stabler comes over and tells her that they got stuff off of the tissue Gabriel used to blow his nose. And she was like, DNA? He's like, yeah, from the victim's fucking tears. Go get that son of a bitch. So Stabler finds Gabriel at the diner. Gabriel tells Stabler that he was told about the apology and offers to share a meal with him. Stabler tells him to stand up and arrest him for rape and murder of Marguerite and the rape of Nina. And that's it. I still think he was framed. I mean, even his face, he was like, I have no idea what's going on. There better be a second episode, but there's fucking not, I guess. So
the way he was presented by the actor, unless this actor was like, this is how I'm playing this. And Dick Wolf's like, this doesn't make any sense. And he's like, well, I'm the talent.
I don't know.
And he's like, okay, fine, whatever. We're going to make 1,000 of these. So who cares?
Right. Toyota.
Toyota.
So.
Doodaloo, doodaloo. Okay, here's the chaser. In 1978, a 19-year-old gal living in Spokane, Washington, was walking home late at night. A man dressed in workout clothes jumped out from behind a car and grabbed her, taking her into nearby bushes where he sexually assaulted her. Mm. During the attack, he continued to shove his gloved fist into her mouth to silence her. After that, between 1978 and 1981, the number of sexual assaults nearly tripled in and around the upscale neighborhood of South Hill in Spokane.
Mm.
In 1978, there had been 49 reports, and in 1980, there were 127.
Holy shit.
Police believe they had a serial rapist on their hands based on repeating reports of the attacker wearing a glove or oven mitt and jamming it into the mouth and throat of the victims during the attack.
Jesus Christ.
I know. Another common report was that he would ask them questions about themselves as well as threaten to kill them if they reported the crime or told anyone. Victims were also usually jogging or had just gotten off a bus. The attacker would also most often be wearing jogging gear, like a tracksuit, and have a knife. It was all over the news, in the papers. Everyone was talking about looking out for the South Hill rapist. The only report of a media source being less than 5 alarm about the situation that I read anyway was in the Spokane Daily Chronicle. Managing editor Gordon Coe wrote, quote, "It is hoped that every man out jogging is not hounded off the streets because some rape reports have said the attacker wore jogging clothes."
What in the
That opinion, not great. On February 5th, 1980, a 51-year-old woman was jogging at 7 a.m. at Hartfield near Sacagawea Junior High School when she was attacked. The next day, a possible break came when a janitor at the school reported seeing a silver Chevy Citation parked there on the morning of the attack. He remembered thinking it was odd because the plate was yellow, which was the color of personalized plates in Washington at the time, but the plate wasn't personalized. It was just regular, which is such a great... That should be used in a TV show. Like, such a great explanation. You noticed the license plate, and it's like, well, yeah, they're very different, and I see a personalized plate, and I'm going to try to read what it says, you know?
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, I saw the yellow plate, and so I was, like, trying to read it, but it was regular. So I just think that that's an interesting real-life thing. That car was registered to Gordon Coe, the managing editor of the Spokane Daily Chronicle that wrote that fucking misogynistic shit. But it was being used exclusively by his son, 34-year-old Frederick Harlan Coe, who didn't go by Frederick. This is 100% true. He was like, call me Kevin.
Why?
I don't know. There is no explanation. He just preferred to be called Kevin and eventually would legally change his name
to Kevin. He just liked the name Kevin.
I guess. Yeah.
Whoa. I thought you were going to be like, just call me Laser, train Laser. Tracks or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. So stupid ass Kevin is a shitty real estate agent. He's selling nothing and terrorizing South Hill. His dad is the editor at the paper and his mom, Ruth, is a Spokane socialite. Author Jack Olson later wrote a nonfiction book called Son, A Psychopath and His Victims that really dives into Coe's relationship with his mother. But he's on the police radar, okay? But isn't on steady surveillance until another rape is reported in South Hill.
Oh, shit.
Coe was finally arrested on March 10th, 1981 for the rape of the jogger at Hart Field. When the other victims are brought in to view a live lineup, Kevin Coe was ID'd by them again and again. All of these victims that come through are like, that's him. That's the guy. Same dude. Fucking Kevin. He's then charged with 5 counts of rape in the first degree and 1 count of second degree rape. Police believed, based on the rapes that he was charged with and the MO, that he is the South Hill rapist that they had been hunting for years. During the trial, which started on July 20th, 1981, his former girlfriend testified that she had suspected him of being the South Hill rapist based on his odd behavior when they lived together the previous year.
Mm.
Coe's mother testified to having been with him during the times of all 6 sexual assaults.
Bullshit.
That he was being charged with.
Sure, Jan.
Coe even said in an interview that he and his mom were trying to catch the South Hill rapist together. Okay. He was ultimately convicted of 4 counts of first-degree rape and sentenced to life plus an additional 75 years. The defense requested he be remanded to a mental health facility, which he was denied. 3 months after Coe's conviction, and I'll tell you about why in a little bit, why they were asking for that. 3 months after Coe's conviction, Kevin's mother, Ruth, remember, was arrested. She was caught on tape trying to hire an undercover officer to murder the judge and turn the prosecutor into, quote, an addle-pated vegetable.
Oh, my God.
She only got a year in jail.
Oh, that judge should be fucking pissed.
She got a year in jail for solicitation of murder, and she also got work release. So
wasn't she a socialite?
I know. I was just going to say, she's like, I have a gala.
Yeah.
I need a cab. So while she was sitting, Coe's attorneys were appealing, and got the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, to overturn 4 first-degree rape convictions, okay? Partly because 3 of these victims were hypnotized prior to identifying Coe. And they were like, that's not cool. You can't, that's going to fuck with your ID.
Yeah.
February of 1985, the second trial of Kevin Coe took place. This time in Seattle, because the case was so well known in Spokane, he wasn't going to get a fair trial. That jury in Seattle convicted him on 3 of the 4 counts, and he was sentenced to life plus 55 years with a 40-year minimum. Then again, in 1988, the Supreme Court overturned 2 of those convictions.
What?
Again, on the hypnosis bullshit. When it was being argued, Chief Justice Vernon Pearson called hypnosis, quote, witness tampering of the worst kind. The fact that they did this and it was up in the air that it was cool or not, like, I just don't understand.
Yeah.
I just don't understand it. Just a gross error, I guess.
Yeah.
The only conviction left was for the attack on Julie Harmia in 1980. She was 27 years old, walking home from the bus stop after work in the middle of the night. She was one of the victims to ID Coe in a lineup. She saw his face. He was resentenced once again, this time to 25 years, which included time served, setting his release date for September 8th of 2006. During this time, his parents both passed away. Ruth died in 96. Gordon died in 99. Mm. So it's just him when this release date rolls around. On August 30th, 2006, shortly before Coe's release, the state attorney general filed a petition to commit him to the state sexually violent predator treatment program. Oh, hang on. In 1990, Washington had passed the Community Protection Act. Okay, so we've run into this before. This statute allows sexually violent predators to be held indefinitely after their sentence has been completed, as long as they are convicted by a jury of having a mental defect that could make them more likely to reoffend. The filing blocked his eligibility for release from the Walla Walla State Prison as scheduled. While he awaited the civil trial, Coe was held at the Special Commitment Center at McNeil Island, which is where he would remain indefinitely if a jury decided so. Mm-hmm. A trial was held 2 years later to decide if Kevin Coe would be released or kept at McNeil Island. The trial consisted of not only the information regarding the one conviction that stuck, but the dozens of other South Hill rapes that fit that description. They were allowed to bring up all of it. Hmm. Also, this is where the original argument by the defense to put him in a mental health facility back in the 80s came back to bite him. Coe had been diagnosed with mixed personality disorder with narcissistic, histrionic, and antisocial features. So just to give a little breadth to what that could mean, mixed personality disorder is diagnosed when no other DSM recognized disorder quite fits. The additional features can possess but are not limited to the following traits: inability to empathize with others, exaggerated feelings of self-importance, needing admiration, excessive attention-seeking behaviors, self-indulgent, egocentric, manipulative, approval-seeking, lack of remorse, limited capacity for empathy, pattern of disregard or violation of the rights of others, impulsive, aggressive, reckless behavior. He also scored a 25.3 on the psychopath checklist, possessing almost all of the core personality traits of a psychopath. So the psychopath checklist is a 20-item list where the subject is rated on a 3-point scale. 0, it doesn't apply. 1, it's a partial match or misinformation. 2, it's a reasonable match. So the numbers are given through face-to-face interviews, but also with their life history, case files, etc. The maximum score is 40. An average person would score a 5 or a 6. 25 or higher are diagnosed with psychopathic personality disorder. And then I read even more. This in itself is a whole mess. I read a more up-to-date article refuting the legitimacy of that test and how it affects courts' decisions to treat these offenders. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to drag you through all of that, but I added that article to my sources for this episode in case anybody's interested in it, because it is really interesting and could...
Yeah, I didn't know there was a test for that.
Oh, yeah. It could lead us down a debate trail that we're just not going to do right now. Mm-hmm. Back to the trial to decide the indefinite hold. Assistant Attorney General Todd Bowers said, quote, "He has a 15-year history of sex offenses against women. Mr. Coe is mentally ill and remains a danger to the community. The evidence was pretty overwhelming," end quote. Inmates at this facility are given an annual review to determine if they are ready for release, but a big part of that hinges on inmates admitting to their crimes and seeking treatment, which he refuses to do. Like, he confessed to one and then redacted that before his first trial because he thought that he was going to be able to get his stay in a mental health facility as opposed to a prison. So then he rescinded his offer. He fucking redacted his confession. What's the word I'm looking for?
Oh, recent? No.
It's not recent.
I think it's redact. No. Recanted.
Recanted. He recanted his redacted. okay. So he's not seeking treatment. He's not confessing to anything. So this trial ends with them going, yeah, he needs to be held. He's still a suspect in many cold case rapes, which will likely never see justice. I think the last time they had counted, they believe that he could be responsible for upwards of 43 reported sexual assaults.
Damn.
Now remember how few actually get reported.
Yeah.
As of January 5th, 2023, the Washington Supreme Court again upheld the lower court's decision in keeping Kevin Coe in custody at McNeil Island. So he's been released from prison since 2006, but has been held indefinitely since then.
Okay.
He's 77 and has been locked away since his early 30s.
Shit. I didn't know anything about that.
Technically, on one rape charge, technically.
Damn. Okay, well.
I don't mean that like just one.
No, I know. Of course.
Somebody finally doesn't get 3 months for a fucking sexual assault. Cool.
Yeah. Anyways, next week we have season 6, episode 21, Blood. Ooh, I think this is going to be good.
Blood.
I don't know. I just saw in the thing, there's like painkillers, fucking babies tossed from a car, an old lady. I don't know what's going on or what this is about, but I think it's going to be fucking good.
Blood. Banana. Okay. Also, people will ask, like, if we skip a week or something, when, you know, we'll get messages that are like, hey, when is your next episode coming out? Are you taking a break? We will always say it at the end of the episode when we're talking about the next episode to come. So we'll let you know if it's going to be next week or if it's going to be a date in the future. We'll let you know what the date is. And the only time that that will get fucked with is in the case of, like, when I dropped my computer and I had no access to put shit out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so if you're ever wondering, it will always say it in the last episode when the next one is coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rate and review us. Give us 5 stars. You can email us at svupod@gmail.com. If you want to send us anything, remember my birthday is coming up. And then Tasha's is after that. I know. P.O. Box 176, DeForest, Wisconsin 53532. All of our social media is at SVU Pod. Get merch, svupod.com or tpublic.com. We have Facebook groups, the SVU Pod Elite Squad. We have a Facebook group chat called Walk and Talk, which is adorable. An offshoot Facebook group called Single Tomato Book Club. Hashtag Little Bit Loud for indie pods. If you are an indie podcaster, hashtag this shit so everybody can find you. Our Patreon is www.patreon.com/svupod. Totally join. We have tons of extra content.
Tons.
And if you want to leave a message or anything or text us, the number is 1-920-345-7005. Again, 1-920-345-7005.
Hooray! Call us!
Hooray!
Join the Patreon! Patreon's gonna keep going. I know we're only 3 episodes away from the end of this season, but Patreon keeps going.
Yeah.
So if you don't want a break from us, come join us there. Okay, love you, bye.
Love you, bye. It has a laceration on her head. However, I mumbled that last part.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, you do know that I did.
Oh, she has a laceration on her head. Don't waste your time, mommy. They explain that there's no rules as far as what you can get fantasy-wise. They explain that there are no rules.
Fantasy-wide? That was my nickname in high school. Oh, your cackles are just giving me life today.
You're funny today.
Thanks. I'm always funny. That was the right thing to say.
Oh, you're either really funny or crabby. And sometimes that's still funny.
It might be both, yeah. It might be.
Okay. Fuck. We are 40. Bum, 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 bum. Oh, my God. They go to Coroner Warner's office. She's examining this tissue. I'll wait.
We are 40. And to our Elite Squad patrons, Marissa M, Elke H, Trisha S, Emily T, Katarina G, Mary D, Joshua H, Lem, Eliza W, Nikki B, Kaylin B, Melanie G,
Andrew,
Miranda B,
Lauren T, Katie A, Kate H, Vanessa, Lex, Shelby K, Kimberly L, Bonita R, Maren,
Courtney W, Ursula, Kate P, Jessica S, Jana M, Tammy J, Bear, Sam D, Nisha G, Mac Attack,
Meg M, Casey, Abby W, Alexis J, Caitlin S, Christina D, Camille Z, Maggie D, Sian,
Jessica P, Zahn and J, Madison H,
Emily, Orchid Sex Club for all of your lady sex needs, Victoria, Scout G, Melissa M, Desiree R, Lexi Y, Drew B,
Monica K, Katie S, Brenna T,
Andrea M, Tash, Jenna, Al H, Andrea H, Nikki R, Gabe's Aunt Sarah. Katie H, Vern, Catherine B, Ariana, Madeline K, Mallory J, Kristen F, Samara B, Doom Sim, Alice D, Amanda P, Mahalia S, Jules K, and Kimberly la 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 L. All right. You guys are great, and we love you so much.
You are making us able to fucking keep doing this, and I really appreciate it. We both appreciate it.
Don't speak for me.
Just me. I'm the only one that... Don't fucking speak for me, bitch.
Okay, love you guys. Bye.
Love you. Bye.